Excuse me, Mr. Ambassador. The interesting thing is that, okay, so Obama administration comes, mm-hmm. does some certain policies with Cuba, with Iran, with other
yes.
countries,
yeah.
goes to Russia, resets
yes.
all these policies.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Trump comes and does his thing. Why is Biden administration not continuing? Biden was the vice president of Obama. Why is it? This is the problem, because people
yes,
say
exactly.
people say, oh, the Democrats are good, the Republicans are bad. No, all of them.
Yes, of course.
So this is a problem. The Biden administration is continuing the policy of Trump.
The same sanctions, no change. We don't expect nothing from Biden administrations, and let's go to see.
With this excuse, they said there was an attack and the hearing of the diplomats and these kind of
yes,
stories.
They create
exactly.
several history in this way and try to get in against Cuba and like Iran very hard. That's what we call mediatic terrorism. And they try to promote mediatic terrorism from different kind of ways. That's why it is so important our channels, our medias, try always to put the reality and the truth under the table in order that people try to know, because they are so strong, no doubt, so strong in mediatic point of view, and they create this kind of things that some problem with your attacks again. That's stupid in several ways, and they know that they cannot make a proof about that. Until this moment, they don't present a proof about that, but nobody take care. They put the lid of the opinion one time, and later than that they don't say nothing else.
Because, you know, it's interesting. In America, everybody knows that whoever wants to become president, they have to win Florida. Because
mm-hmm,
of the presidential system in America, the
yes.
Electoral College, it's not one person, one vote. It's mm-hmm. it's the states. And Florida is an important state. And
exactly.
Cubans
yes.
in the U.S. who are anti the Cuban government
yes.
have a very prominent role in southern Florida.
Some analytic people always speak that the foreign policies of the United States toward Cuba is not foreign policies, it's internal policies.
Exactly.
It's because they want always regarding their election process in the
exactly,
United States.
Because it seems that those people who, for whatever reason, have a problem with...
Yes.
It might be even personal and family.
Yes, exactly.
They are keeping hostage the real national interests of America.
Yes,
it's not
a group, and a small group. Let me tell you, it's a small group. Very powerful. They have a lot of money and a lot of conditions, economic point of view, and they make a lot of influence in the Congress and in the government in the United States. But it's proof on the survey that the Cuban people in Miami, Cuban people in Florida, they want a normal relationship with our country. It's the normal way to do it. But some of this kind of people, a small group, very right people, in the right sides, they have hijacking the policies toward
it. Seems the younger generation, the second generation Cubans that are in that area.
Yes, it's coming another kind of generation. Of course, in the United States, we have one big amount. Taking account the populations in Cuba, we are 11 million. We have around 2 million people living in America, in the United States, and mainly of them in Florida, of course. And they have a lot of influence. But the majority of the people, big majority of the people, they immigrate to the United States because of economic reasons.
Right.
Cuba is a poor country, no doubt. It's a third country, no doubt. We have a lot of problems in the point of view of the economic. And many people say normal. It's, how to say it, it's human people sometimes want to immigrate to another country. But to use these immigrations in the political point of view is the wrong things and the really bad things.
Exactly. Okay, Mr. Ambassador, before we go to mm-hmm. maybe our main subject, which is Iran-Cuba relations,
yes.
I want to ask two more questions.
Mm-hmm.
One is that, or I want to continue with what we were saying. I think maybe we can summarize this part of our discussion as it relates to America and Cuba,
mm-hmm.
that America basically wants to punish Cuba because it mm-hmm. doesn't like to have independent countries as its neighbors. It mm-hmm. wants to punish Cuba because it's an independent country and it gives hope to other countries.
Yes.
In Latin America, Cuba was very prominent during the mm-hmm. Cold War in liberation movements, very famously in Angola, in mm-hmm. many other countries, also
yes.
Latin America. So I think maybe we can say it this way.
Yes.
It is in America's national interest to have good relations with Cuba,
mm-hmm.
but it is the policy is held hostage.
Mm-hmm.
And on the other hand, you have this old imperialist view among the American elites
mm-hmm.
that cannot handle the fact that you have a country which is their neighbor, very close mm-hmm. neighbor, being independent and not doing what they say. So if you could please summarize this,
yes.
this part
Let
of
this. Yes, let me tell you, I have a reference many people have publicly, people and high-level people in the United States, they said the problem with Cuba is personal. It's something crazy. And you could say that's something, how's possible politicians could say this is a personal problem against one country? We are talking 11 million people. We are not talking about nothing. We are not talking about neighbors house to house. We are talking about neighbors countries.
And Fidel Castro is no longer here, so why?
Yes, that's why that show you exactly. The real intention of them. Exactly. They want to annex Cuba to the United States.
They actually wanted to.
That's the dreams of the many people yes. in America. And when you go and you talk to many people there, and some people that are confusing, and the other one not, but they said that Cuba belongs to the United States. Cuba belongs. Not to be a small island, how's possible more than 60 years small island could stand up in front of the big power of the United States. So they don't could analyze that, and they don't accept it in this way. During the period of Obama and another kind of period, a lot of Americans goes to Cuba as a visit, as a tourism, and they could prove the reality exactly. in that one. That I consider that it could happen with the Iran too. If the people come here and they could see in the proper way the hospitality of the Iranian people, the great things of the Iranian people, the potential of this country, please, this is not confusion on that. That's why they promote and create problem. They don't want, they know very well our countries. They don't want that.
Anybody who has visited both Cuba and Iran,
yes,
whether they're American, Western, whoever, mm-hmm. is exactly this happens to them. They come here.
Yes.
And they see that all the propaganda and all the lies is completely different than what the reality
yes,
is.
Yes, that's the point.
Exactly.
And I suppose one time the truth will come in out. The truth will tell about our countries. That is an unbelievable. We are under very hard war. This is mediated war, our country. In many ways, technologically, you use the techno in order to produce bad things and to overthrow our governments in both countries and overthrow the conditions inside our countries.
Thank you for joining us. Until the next time on Insight.
ارزش‌ها و صفاتی که انسان احترام می‌گذاره همه این ارزش‌ها در علی ابن ابی طالب جمعه.
Human in general, whether a Muslim, non-Muslim, or even a disbeliever, respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib.
لا يقيم امر الله سبحانه الا من لا يصانع ولا يضارع ولا يتبع المطامع.
Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, the reason we love him as our hero, or not only in the material sense, in the spiritual sense, in the leadership sense.
Universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam in To My Brother. Imam Ali alayhi salam, the most distinguished and extraordinary personality in Islam after the Holy Prophet Muhammad. His entire life is a struggle for the advancement of Islam, the universal religion prescribed by Allah for all of humanity. Imam Ali alayhi salam was the living miracle raised up by the Holy Prophet Muhammad himself, and was not only the successor and the executor of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, but as history testifies, he was also a great human being. A brave defender of Islam, a just and fair judge, a generous philanthropist, a champion of the people, and the most pious person of his time. And in today's world, overcome by evil and darkness, and oppression and slavery, and tyranny and falsehood, A quick look into this beacon of truth and justice, a look into the universal persona of Imam Ali, is greatly useful for making and changing our lives, our families, our societies, and our world into the beautiful world that Allah has planned for humanity.
قال أمير المؤمنين علي عليه السلام: كل معاجل يسأل الإنذار، وكل مؤجل يتعلل بالتسويف.
Imam Ali said, "He whom death overtakes early seeks time, while he whose death is deferred puts forth excuses for the postponement of doing good actions." Welcome back, dear friends. It's great to have you with us. This is IRIB English Radio. The program's To My Brother, and we're discussing the universal persona of Imam Ali, alayhi salam. So, dear friends, when we're talking about the universal persona of Imam Ali, alayhi salam, the first divinely appointed Imam, the living miracle of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings upon him and his holy household, we find that the words of wisdom that Imam Ali alayhi salam gave to the world and gifted to the world is such that it is applicable to each and every person upon this earth. And what is even more beautiful about this idea of the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam is the fact that this persona and this character and this personality is not limited by time. So what I'm trying to say is that despite the passing of well over 1,000 years, we find that the universal persona of Imam Ali is truly applicable to our time. One of the interesting and beautiful things that we learn from this universal persona of Imam Ali is this idea that generosity has its roots in man's dignity. So, of course, when a person is dignified, when a person has self-respect, and when an individual realizes the self-respect and the dignity of others, they become generous. Now, sometimes it might happen that we are generous with people, but then we go and, you know, we brag about it to them, or we try to make them feel like we did a favor upon them. Now, what is interesting is that holding a person under obligation for one's generosity is contrary to a human being's greatness. And of course, this is the statement from His Eminence Imam Ali alayhi salam. If you are generous with an individual, if you give charity or if you give sadaqah, charity, alms tax, zakat, the Islamic tax, or you help somebody in need, any kind of form of generosity, stems from a human being's dignity. And of course, to hold another individual under obligation because of your generosity is a very bad virtue. It is an evil virtue, and it is something that is contrary to the appropriate and correct behaviors and morals that the beautiful religion of Islam has taught us. Again, a beautiful and profound lesson brought to us by the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma inni as'aluka al-aman yawma la yanfa'u malun wa la banun illa man ata Allah bi qalbin salim.
O Allah, I ask you for the protection of the day when property will not avail, nor sons except he who comes with a heart free from evil.
Wa as'aluka al-aman yawma ya'uddu adh-dhalimu ala yaday yaqulu ya laytani ittakhadhtu ma'a ar-rasul sabila.
And I ask you for protection on the day when the unjust one will bite his hands, saying, oh, would that I had taken away with the messenger.
تمام ارزش‌ها و صفاتی که انسان چه به عنوان انسان مؤمن به اسلام چه به عنوان انسان مؤمن به هر دینی
human in general, whether a Muslim, non-Muslim, or even a disbeliever, respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib. This means Ali ibn Abi Talib is a global character who is respected by Sunnis, Shias, and even non-Muslims. Everyone, even the faithless people, respect Imam Ali and his personal values.
And now we invite you to listen to Sayyid Muhammad Ridhvi.
So we have Ali ibn Abi Talib, man indahu ilm al-kitab. On that level, just second person in the universe after Rasulullah. And so the person who kills him, Rasulullah in the khutbah that I presented yesterday, describes Ibn Muljim as Ashqul Awwaleen wal Akhireen. Ali had the Ilmul Awwaleen wal Akhireen. And the person who killed Ali was the most wretched of all the ummas who came before and who came later on. Shaqawat, this is opposite of Sa'adat. Sa'adat means to be fortunate, to be blessed by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Shaqawat is the opposite of that. And the reason why Ibn Muljim was such, because he had a heart which was filled with the hatred of Ali ibn Abi Talib. And Rasulullah had said that, O Ali, nobody will love you but a mu'min and nobody will hate you but a munafiq. Yet Ali was even just, more than just, kind with his own, killer. We talked about it yesterday also, the night before also. A person who has been struck right there is going through the pain, trying to hold the blood from coming out. You know, Hassan al-Mushtaba is carrying has placed the head of the father on his lap. And at that time, Ibn Muljim comes. Any normal human being, the reaction would be to express hatred towards that person. But what does this Imam of Adl do? No, not the Imam of Adl. He is the Imam of Rahmah. He is the Imam of Ra'fa. He is the kind and merciful Imam. Says to his son Hassan, that look at him. Look at his face. Look at his eyes. You can see fear. Because of course, everybody was cursing him. People were trying to beat him at that time. And he says, oh my son, I advise you to treat him also. He is your prisoner now. He is your asir. Treat him with kindness. Especially make sure that you do not forget his meals and his food.
Listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of To My Brother. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. We leave you in Allah's care. Bye for now.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en. Thank you.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
يا أيها الذين آمنوا, O you who believe, استعينوا بالصبر والصلاة.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, now let's listen to Sheikh Salim Bimji.
My dear brothers and sisters in Iman, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I want to speak about three of the benefits of fasting at this point as we try and really benefit from this month. So one of the things that we can benefit from this month is that it is a month of spirituality. It is a complete body experience, actually. Not just hunger and thirst, but the fasting is to fast our entire body. Our sight, our hearing, our speech, where we go, what we do, who we associate with, what we're saying, what we're typing, what we're reading, what we're listening to, everything. And this is clear from the ahadith, and I'm just going to give you one hadith on each of these three topics today. The hadith on the spirituality of fasting comes to us from our beloved Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam, in which he has been quoted as saying that whenever you fast, so let your hearing, your vision, and your skin fast. And then the companion who is narrating this hadith, he says the Prophet went on to mention a number of other body parts that should be engaged in the fasting as well. And then the Prophet said the day of your fast should not happen to be like the day of your breaking, meaning the day that you're not fasting. So fasting is also to not look at the impermissible, to not listen to the impermissible, to not speak the impermissible, to not do anything with any part of the body, not just, you know, preventing the stomach, or the throat, or the lips, or the mouth. It is to prevent every organ of the body from what it wants, what it may desire, what it may lust after even. That's the first aspect of fasting that we need to recognize to be able to benefit from this month to the fullest potential possible, is to recognize the spirituality of it. The second aspect of Ramadan is the social effect. You know, it brings some balance in society. And I say some, you know, underline, bold, capitalize that word. There's only some balance which is brought in society, you know, again, because it's only for 30 days. But the hope is that whatever you and I will learn in 30 days will then, God willing, continue through the rest of the year. And this is actually in the ahadith, the sayings of the Prophet and his family. May Allah bless all of them. Where they've shown us that fasting, as much as it is a spiritual experience to connect to Allah, to connect to God, it's also a social work in progress. And so we have a hadith from the 11th Imam, Imam Hassan ibn Ali al-Askari alayhi salam, in which he was once asked the rationale, the reasoning, the philosophy behind the obligation of fasting. And he replied to the individual saying that so that the rich may experience the pain of hunger and bestow their generosity upon the poor. You know, when you are blessed by God to have everything at your disposal, you don't feel hunger ever from the time you wake up to the time you go to bed. And maybe you work or live in an area where you don't even have an opportunity to see a homeless, to interact with a destitute, a poor person. Maybe your entire network of family and friends are people in a similar income bracket. So you don't, you know, go to homes of people who maybe live in an apartment, a one bedroom with four people or more, as some of our community members have gone through and continue to go through. You don't feel hunger, you don't feel any of the difficulties. You want something, you need a new computer or a phone or a TV, you just go online and a few clicks, you order it, and it's at your doorstep the next day. And so the 11th Imam says that one of the philosophies behind the fast of Ramadan is so that the rich may experience the pain of hunger. Not only experience the pain, but to follow up and help the poor. And so we see that there is a social component, a social component rather. As with a lot of actions in Islam, prayers have a personal component and a societal component. Hajj, obviously, the greatest show of social importance in Islam. Many other acts of worship are of a social nature. The charity that we give is to help bring up the people in society who are the deprived, who are the less, who are the most vulnerable of the society. So that's the second reason, is the social impact. The third, though, and I want to, mention this and then we will conclude in the next few minutes, are the health effects. We don't deny that we live in a gluttonous society today. I don't want to only point the finger at us, but you go around the world to many other countries. Yes, there are some countries which are very deprived and very don't have it as good as we do, but there are many countries, not only in North America and Europe, but even in the Middle East, for example, and even in the Far East, where it is a very gluttonous society. It's a very carefree society where you eat what you want, you can order what you want. Right? We have whole movies and documentaries called Super Size Me to show the level of availability of food and excessive food at that as well. High caloric food, very low nutritional value food. The fact today that you can sit at home and on your phone, you can order a meal from hundreds of different restaurants and have it delivered to you shows the challenges that even the health experts are pointing to of the society and the changes and the mindset that people have gotten into. And so, as I said, that although Ramadan and the fasting is a spiritual experience to connect to God, it is also a social experience in connecting to humanity by feeling the pain of others and hopefully being generous to help the needy out. It is also a benefit for the health. And so we have a hadith from the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam, where he has been quoted as saying that the stomach is the home of every disease, and fasting / dieting is the peak of every medicine. You know, it's not necessarily a need, unless obviously you got to that extreme of having to take medication for health complications, people spending millions of dollars on diets, on fads, every month maybe a new diet is coming out, this diet, that diet. People name diets after various foods and various food groups and various individuals. And you see TV commercials promising weight loss by downloading an app and going through the process, or signing up and eating certain special foods you have to purchase from companies for thousands of dollars a year. And maybe some people may need all of that, perhaps. But if you go right back down to the basics, is as the Prophet says, the stomach is the home of every disease. Because we are putting too much food into our stomach, we're putting the wrong things into our stomach, given the fact that we also live in a society with processed food, the fact that a lot of our food are contaminated by chemicals, all of this is perhaps adding to the situation. You know, we don't live the life of 14 centuries ago. We don't even live the life of 100 years ago, where there were few and far between in terms of fast food, even if there was even a concept or a word called fast food 100 years ago. I don't think there was. Right? But we live in a time now where fast food is available. Food, again, as I said, high caloric intake, low nutritional value, high in sodium, high in cholesterol, high in fats, and low in actual benefit to the human body. So the Prophet says that the stomach is the storehouse, the central point of every disease that you can think of. And fasting / dieting is the way to give yourself a home personal remedy and cure. Now, I'm not saying you don't go to the doctor, or you don't take your medication, or you don't go to the gym. Those are all needed if you need to go to that route. But my point is that if we begin to teach our children from a young age, and maybe the schools aren't teaching it, so we need to maybe teach this on the minbar, in the majalis, in the madrasa, about healthy eating, about actively knowing what we eat, where it comes from, and the nutritional value. If we can learn these from a young age, then we will perhaps be able to ensure our next generation are more health conscious than we are, that they eat better than we do.
Dear listeners of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, you can follow this program entitled Minbar every day in the month of Ramadan. If you have any suggestion, you can send us your email at englishradio@irib.ir.
Love is everywhere, so much peace fills up the air. Ramadan, month of the Quran, I feel it inside me, strengthening my iman. But how I wish you'd be here with me all year around. Ramadan.
Ramadan, the month of opportunities. In the name of Allah, the compassionate, the merciful. Salam and welcome to the program. Dear listeners, in no month the faithful have been recommended to pray and supplicate as in the blessed month of Ramadan. Interestingly, in many of the prayers of this month, a special attention has been paid to the Imam of the Age, Imam Mahdi, may God hasten his reappearance. The aspirations and ideals of mankind are highly bolded in these prayers and supplications. These ideals will materialize only in the time of Imam Mahdi's rule, and he's the person who will lead humanity towards that ideal society. According to the Islamic narrations, Ramadan is the best month for praying, and the best prayer is to ask God to expedite the reappearance of the Savior of mankind. One of the famous supplications and prayers that the faithful are recommended to recite in the nights of Ramadan is Dua-e-Iftitah, or prayer of opening. Opening here means removal of sorrows and end of miseries and solving all problems. The prayer begins with praising God and celebrating His attributes, glorifying His mercy and seeking His forgiveness. Then God is praised and thanked for guiding us through the Prophet of Islam and his infallible successors. The Prophet of Islam, his daughter Fatima, and the 12 Imams are mentioned and greeted in the prayer by name. And the prayer ends with complaining God for the absence of Imam Mahdi and beseeching God to terminate the period of occultation and hasten the Imam's reappearance. In part of the prayer we say, O God, indeed we are inclined toward you in the noble government of Imam Mahdi, whereby you will dignify Islam and its people, and will abase hypocrisy and its people, and will make us among the callers to your obedience and leaders to your way, and through it grant us the nobility of the world and the hereafter. We hope that God will answer the prayers of the faithful across the world and will shorten the period of Imam Mahdi's stay in occultation, as he is the last savior of mankind. He is the man who will obliterate injustice and tyranny and will spread justice everywhere. One of the beautiful traditions in Islam is relation with relatives. Relations with relatives is called Sile-i Rahim. It means visiting each other and helping one another in problems. This tradition is very effective in the life of this world and the hereafter. Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, says in his famous sermon on the blessed month of Ramadan, "In this month, have relation with relatives. He who keeps relation with relatives, God will send his mercy to him of the day of judgment, while he who severs relation with relatives, God will keep his mercy away from him." According to the narrations, relatives are both those who share a common ancestor with us or those whom we have got linked through marriage. Relation with relatives is an obligatory act, and the nearest relatives are parents and siblings. Now the question is, how can we sever relations with relatives who are bad-tempered, corrupt, or even faithless? Our divine leaders tell us that we cannot sever relations with these relatives. However, the kind of relation changes according to the conditions. For instance, we can decrease commutations or be in contact with them through telephone, email, or and so on. Imam Sadiq, peace upon him, says, "Nothing severs the right of relatives. Then, if they are brothers in faith, they have two rights. One is the right of relative and the other is the right of Islam." Relation with relatives has a broad meaning. It includes being kind to them, trying to solve their problems, helping them with their debts, bidding what is good and forbidding what is evil, visiting their patients, respecting them, etc. Imam Sadiq, peace upon him, says, "Have relation with relatives. Do good to your brothers, even if with good greetings and replying their greetings." Elsewhere, the Imam says, "Have relation with your relatives even with a sip of water." It has been mentioned in Islamic narrations that relation with relatives has many positive impacts. Imam Sadiq, peace upon him, says, "Relation with relatives makes the temperament good, makes the hand generous, purifies the soul, increases sustenance, and delays the hour of death. It makes the reckoning of the day of judgment easy and prevents man from bad death." On the contrary, the divine leaders have warned against the effects of severing relation with relatives. A man asked the Prophet, "What is the most hated act with God?" The Messenger of Mercy answered, "Associating partner with God." The man asked, "And after that?" The Prophet said, "He who severs relation with relatives." One of the things that create many problems for the digestive system is eating in hurry. Thus, we should avoid eating hurriedly in iftar or sahari, that is pre-dawn meal. We should have the iftar and sahari calmly and slowly. This way, the digestive system will metabolize the food and drink better. We should avoid stress, anxiety, fear, and excitement while eating. The blessed month of Ramadan is a good opportunity to consume healthy oils. Olive oil is the one of the best oils which have been highly recommended by physicians and specialists of nutrition. Sesame oil is also very good. Specialists advise us to consume both animal and plant proteins. Yet, animal protein is absorbed 15% better. However, seeds like lentil, peas, and beans are good if we do not use them extravagantly.
If you ask me, why do I stand here so unafraid of everything around me? Proudly I would say, I am a Muslim. If you ask her, why does she dress that way, all covered up in a world that gives it all away? Proudly she would say, I am a Muslim.
Islamic laws.
If you ask him, why does he still pray 5 times a day when so many others have strayed? Smiling, he would say, I am a Muslim. Dini al-Islam, dini, wal-Arab ghayru dini, Muhammad illi hadini.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God, welcome to the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Javad, hosting this program. And sitting in the studio along with me, Sheikh Javid, well, the dear guest speaker in this program, Islamic Laws. Welcome to the program, Sheikh Javid.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
The pleasure is ours. Stay tuned. We'll be back. We're going to talk about, in fact, some of the rules related to fasting and Ramadan, since we are in the month of mercy, in the month of barakah, and in the month of Ramadan. So we're going to deal with this, in fact, according to the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. But before that, let's take a listen to a short biography. A little bit of background about Ayatollah Khamenei. He was born in 1939. When he began his Hawza studies, it took him 5.5 years to finish the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh. The standard time for studying the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh for an Iranian student that is not raised with the Arabic language is about 10 years. At the age of 18, he starts attending Bahthul Kharij. Bahthul Kharij, he starts it in Mashhad under Sayyid Hadi Milani. For 7 years straight, he was in Qom studying under Ayatollah Burujerdi, Imam Khomeini, the son of Ayatollah Ha'ari, who set up the Hawza in Qom, Sheikh Murtaza Ha'ari, which was one of the top figures in Qom. Then he went back to Mashhad. For 4 years, he studied Kharij under Ayatollah Milani again. Speaking to some of those who knew Ayatollah Khamenei in Iran, when the issue of the ijtihad of Ayatollah Khamenei came up, they said, we testify that he was a mujtahid not now, but in 1337, that's in the Iranian calendar, 1337, that's the first year that he started his Bahthul Kharij. He was teaching also. He had classes, he was teaching makasas, some of the advanced classes in the Hawza, he was teaching that. 5 years before the actual movement started by Imam Khomeini, he was a mujtahid according to that testimony. And when the movement of Imam Khomeini began, he was part of it, he was politically active, but he also was involved with his studies, as we said. Up to 1347, he was actively participating in Bahthul Kharij of Ayatollah Milani in Mashhad. And after he became the supreme leader, a little while after that, because he was requested a lot to start Bahthul Kharij, he started Bahthul Kharij and he's teaching. One can very clearly testify that this man is no doubt one of the most just and adil scholars that would not, for any reason, for his children, for his family, for his personal benefit, for any party's benefit, for anything other than Allah, change his view and make a decision to go against what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has said because of something like that.
Back to the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javid, our guest speaker, as always in the studio with us, shedding light on the Ramadan-related Islamic laws in this program, Islamic Laws, well, on IRIB English Radio, well, according to Ayatollah Khamenei's views regarding fasting and Ramadan. Sheikh Javid, let me start off this episode with this question, because we all know that the kafara for those people who miss out on one fasting day, for example, is giving out one mut, right, of food. Well, the question is, or the question that I would like to ask you is about the money, in fact, given instead of the food. Is it permissible or is it sufficient for this person to give a needy person the money instead of the food itself of one mut, which is obviously 750 grams, right?
Yeah. Well, Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. It depends, you know, it depends on whether the person who receives the money is reliable, if he makes sure or if he is certain that the recipient, who is supposedly a poor person, is going to use the money to buy food. There is no problem in giving money instead of food to that individual. But if he's not certain, you know, since it is very much important to make sure that the person uses the money to buy food, and since he is not certain, it's necessary to buy food and give the kafara or the fidya in the form of food. And you know that people who are sick, a pregnant woman who cannot, let's say, cannot fast, these are people who are supposed to give, you know, one mud or 750 grams of foodstuff to the poor.
Mm-hmm.
And it is necessary for them, in fact, to make sure it's necessary. And in this scenario, when they are not certain that the maybe that if they give money, they will buy the money, they will use the money to buy things, food.
Mm-hmm.
So in this, they have in this scenario, they have to give food to the poor person. And of course, when it comes to fidya, of course, fidya, it is permissible to give all the fidya to one person. For example, if you did not, you know, fast for the 30 days of Ramadan or 20 mm-hmm. days of 29 days of Ramadan, you can give all the 750 grams of food to one and the same person.
Mm-hmm.
It's not necessary to give it to different, to 29 or 30 different people.
Mm-hmm, I see.
As far as the penalty is concerned, the kafara for breaking your fast intentionally or the kafara for breaking your fast with something haram, of course,
mm-hmm.
it is necessary to give food to different to 60 different people.
Mm-hmm. I see. Okay, Sheikh Javid, you know, if a person is appointed as an attorney, right, to feed a group of needy people, can he take any wages for the work that he does or he offers, such as, for example, cooking the food, from the kafara money with which he was entrusted?
Well, he cannot take anything from the kafara money because the kafara is and was it has to be given to the poor and needy people, but obviously he is entitled to wages. He can receive wages, and there is no problem. Now, whatever the amount of wages, he can you know, he can talk to the person who has authorized him to cook the food and give the food to the poor people to give his wages at the same time. You know. He has the right to receive wages because he can tell him that I'm not going to work for him unless unless you give me my wages. So
mm-hmm.
he is quite right. He is quite entitled to the wages,
mm-hmm.
but he cannot take it from
kafara
the money from
money,
the
or take
kafara.
It away from it.
Yeah, the kafara has to be distributed among the poor and the needy.
Yes. Okay. Thank you very much, Sheikh Javid. Let's take a short break, and we'll be back. Don't go away.
The followers of Ayatollah Khamenei can refer to leader.ir/en. In the section Religious Affairs, you can ask your question and receive the answer. In the library section, some of Ayatollah Khamenei's works of jurisprudence are available, including Practical Laws of Islam, Frequently Asked Questions, Comparative Fatwa, and Newly Asked Questions.
Back to the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio with me, Mohammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Chawbid, our guest speaker. We are still talking about Ramadan-related jurisprudential laws, according to Ayatollah Khamenei. Sheikh Chawbid, a woman could not, in fact, fast because of pregnancy. And we all know that pregnant women should take or extra care for their would-be child, you know, to deliver. And there is a time that they have to keep to themselves. And they cannot obviously fast because it might be dangerous for the mother as well as the infant or fetus. Well, she knew that after the delivery, she must, in fact, offer the qadha, you know, because of the all the days of Ramadan and fasting that she missed, in fact, fasting. All right? Yeah. However, she did not fast after the delivery, intentionally or otherwise,
yeah,
for several years. Does she have to pay only the kafara for that year or for all the years that she delayed her fasting?
Well, there are, I should say, there are three things to note. One is that this pregnant woman who did not fast for some reason, or because she was afraid, she feared that fasting might affect her health or that of the child.
Mm-hmm.
So there was no objection to her breaking her fast in that case. But of course, giving the qadha or offering the qadha or performing the qadha of the fast is obligatory, and she should perform the qadha whenever it is possible for her to perform, and to ignore or to neglect her duty to perform the qadha is a sin, and whenever she can, she must perform the qadha. Now, if a person deliberately and intentionally delay the qadha until the next month of Ramadan, and then maybe she delays until the next years and many years after, she still has not performed the qadha, there's only one, kafara, for delaying. You know, the kafara for delaying the qadha of the fast is 750 grams of food, you know. And if you give it once to 30 people, or maybe to one person, because it's not the qadha, it's not a kafara for deliberately breaking your fast, the fidya or the penalty can be given to one person, to one poor family. And then if many years have passed, the kafara is not repeated.
Mm-hmm.
Repeated, even though many years, for example, 10 years have passed and she has not still performed the qadha of the mm-hmm. fast, she has to give only one kafara, and that's 750 grams of food for each delayed day, for each left out day. In addition, she has to offer the qadha, of course.
Mm-hmm.
That is.
I see. Okay, thank you very much, Sheikh Chawbid, for your nice elaboration and shedding light on some of these jurisprudential laws about fasting and Ramadan, according to Ayatollah Khamenei, in this program, Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio. I'm Muhammad Jawad, signing off. Assalamu alaikum.